The Lord be with you. You're listening to a podcast from the teaching ministry of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. For more multimedia content or to get more information, go to www.epiclesis.org. Now, here's Pastor Chris.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another teaching from a Sunday morning at Epiclesis. As always, we love to direct folks over to the Epiclesis website. That's epiclesis.org, spelled E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. You can always find more information about Epiclesis, the church, what we believe, and more importantly, how to find out where we are. We'd love to have you come worship with us some Sunday morning. On this particular Sunday morning, our very special guest was New York Times bestselling author Rod Dreher. Rod was in town to lead a retreat for us titled Live Not by Lies. That's the name of one of his best-selling books, along with another book that was very influential in the life of our church titled The Benedict Option. In this particular talk, Rod shares an important story about his father and a homecoming of sorts when Rod moved his family back to his small hometown in Louisiana, ministered to his father during the time of his dad's illness and death, and how a 14th century epic poem helped restore his faith in God. Now, here's Rod Dreher.
It's been our great privilege and pleasure to have Rod Dreher with us, and what a great honor to have him speak in our morning service. On behalf of all of us, Rod, bless you. Thank you for being here, and come now and share with us, would you?
Hello. Thank you, Pastor Chris, and thank you, everybody, for welcoming me to your community this weekend. It's been such a source of encouragement to me. As I told the folks in the retreat yesterday, I'm fairly isolated. I live at home, and I've worked from home for 10 years, and I enter into the very online world every morning. And it can be pretty nasty out there, but it's such a gift from God to come among real flesh and blood Christians. Even though I'm an Eastern Orthodox Christian, you all are evangelicals, we are all one in our love for our Lord. So thank you for encouraging me and building me up by simply welcoming me among you. I want to talk this morning about how God can use anything to bring us back to himself and to heal us, and how he can even use art and poetry. 700 years ago this autumn, Dante Alighieri, the author of The Divine Comedy, died in Ravenna in Italy. He died in exile. He had been exiled from his city of Florence at the peak of his power not only as a poet, but as a leader in the city. Suddenly, he got on the wrong side of politics. He found himself exiled. And he wrote the Divine Comedy, which is to say Dante's Inferno, the follow-up Purgatorio, and then Paradiso, as a way of dealing with his exile and reconciling himself to the Lord, or showing how he was reconciled to the Lord. What does this have to do with me? 10 years ago, my sister died of cancer. My wife and I were living in Philadelphia with our kids then, but we decided to move back with our children to my small South Louisiana hometown to be with my folks and my sister's husband and children. For me, this was going to be a homecoming after many years of having been away from Louisiana. Well, it went very badly. I discovered before too long that the problems in our family system went much deeper than I had imagined. It's a sad and complicated story centering on my relationship with my father, but the upshot is that they had no intention of welcoming us back. This shattered me emotionally. I became chronically ill with Epstein-Barr, which is the virus that causes mononucleosis. The rheumatologist said I would never get better if I didn't leave Louisiana and get away from the source of all the anxiety that was making me sick. I told him I couldn't do that because I was the last living child my parents had, and even though they were difficult, I needed to be there for them. Besides, I had moved my wife and my three children around the country so many times, it just wasn't in the cards to move. Okay, he said, but you're not going to get better until you find inner peace. Well, I began to see a therapist. My wife insisted on it. I'm like, not me. But she said, look, you're sleeping 6 hours a day in addition to what I was sleeping at night. You're in no position to say no. And, well, she was right. My Orthodox parish priest gave me a prayer rule that required 1 hour a day of intensive meditative prayer, the Jesus prayer. And then one day I found myself in the poetry section of a Barnes & Noble looking at the top shelf at a copy of The Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri. And I remember thinking, I wish I'd read that in college, but I figured now it was way too late that I was not capable of reading this giant poem from the 14th century and understanding it. But I took it off the shelf anyway, and I opened it to the first page of The Inferno, which is the first book. The opening lines said, "In the middle of the journey of our life, I came to myself in a dark wood, for I had lost the straight path." Those lines hit me like lightning bolts. I thought, this is me. I thought I was making a homecoming, but in fact, I landed in a dark wood, and I don't know how to get out of it. Well, I read on and discovered that the Inferno was the beginning of the character Dante. He's a pilgrim in the poem. His name is Dante. His journey through hell, through purgatory, and heaven. The whole poem is this mythical journey through the afterlife on Easter weekend into the resurrection of his soul. In real life, the poet Dante, as I said earlier, had been exiled from the home city of Florence, and that's an incredibly brutal fate for a man of his time and place. The Divine Comedy, or Commedia, as they call it in Italian, is how the poet Dante explained his return to the Lord and the peace he found even though he lived in permanent exile. Maybe, I thought, God's sending me a message in a bottle with this poem. So I bought and began to read the Commedia, but I didn't read it like a literary exercise. I read it like a man who was trying to read a map that would lead him out of the dark wood. For me, reading the Commedia was a journey through my own broken heart. I learned a lot about myself. The most important thing I learned is that I had, without meaning to, made a God out of my father. I had assumed that God the Father loved me, but that he disapproved of me. And only if I just worked hard enough, finally God the Father would give me his total unconditional affection. Well, in fact, this was how my own earthly father saw me. But my brokenness, the brokenness I found myself in that had made me so sick physically, had a lot to do with the fact that I felt like I couldn't live without my dad's approval, something that my return home proved that I was just never going to get. What's more, my mistaking God the Father for my dad cut me off from the only pure and upbuilding love I could ever hope to find in this universe. Once I became aware of this, of the confusion in my own heart between God the Father and my own dad, I took it to confession, and I repented of it. I told the priest I'd made an idol of my father and a family and place, and without even meaning to, given it the place that belonged only to God the Father, and I'm sorry for that, and I begged for the Lord's pardon and his grace to be healed of it. Well, when that happened, God's healing grace began flooding into me, and I slowly began to get better, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. But still, I struggled with so much anger at my dad. How can he treat me this way? I brought my kids back, his grandkids back. We left the East Coast and came back to this little town for him, for all of them. And this is how they treated us. I was so angry at them, at the injustice of this. My priest, Father Matthew, told me, Rod, you have to try to find a way to love them anyway, even though they don't love you as you want to be loved, and as maybe you deserve to be loved. Father Matthew said, this is how Christ treats us. We do not give him the love that he deserves, but he loves us anyway. Father Matthew said, it is God's will that we love even those who mistreat us. Don't stand on justice, stand on love, he said. Well, I knew he was right, but this was so difficult for me because I have something in me that demands justice. I knew that I had to fight this dragon of resentment that dwelled in a cave deep in my heart if I was going to be faithful to my Lord. I had to force myself to put aside my demand for justice and my relationship with my dad. And at the same time, I was reading in Dante's Paradiso, the third part of the Divine Comedy where Dante is in heaven. I read that he meets a nun there named Picarda. And the nun tells the pilgrim Dante that he should stop trying to judge God's economy of love by human standards. Just obey the Lord, she says to Dante, and trust in his commands. He knows best for us. She says to Dante these words, in his will is our peace. Well, there it was. This is the same message Father Matthew was having trying to impress on me in confession. Trust in the Lord's will. Continue to love your father and your family, because this is what he commands. So I made that message, and his will is our peace, the cornerstone of my fight against my own pain and resentment. I knew my dad was sick and old and in decline, and that I needed to try to love him on until the end. I knew that my dad also was so prideful and hard-headed that I really couldn't hope for reconciliation. It just wasn't in the cards, and that this was the cross I had to bear. Well, we got to the spring of 2015, and it was clear that my dad didn't have too much longer to live. He said as much to me one afternoon. I asked him if he would like me to help him get in touch with anybody from his past that he would like to forgive or to ask forgiveness of. My dad looked at me and said, "Well, why would I do that? I hadn't done anything wrong in my life." He was totally serious, 81 years old, but this is what he thought. Well, I wanted to argue with him, but I suppressed the instinct, said, "Just let's be at peace." The next day, I dropped by my dad's house to do a quick job for him. He was sitting on his front porch in his rocking chair with his newspaper draped over his walker, drinking his coffee. I kissed him on the cheek, told him good morning, and told him I'd just be in and out. I had a very busy day that day. After I fixed the problem in his house, I came back out and leaned over to kiss him goodbye. As I drew back after kissing his cheek, he grabbed me by the forearm and he pulled me in close. His chin was quivering. The old man looked frightened. He looked vulnerable, and his eyes filled with tears. He began to stammer. I had a long talk with the Lord last night, he began. I talked to him about my transgressions against you. I told him I was sorry, and I think he heard me. He looked up at me. Well, there I stood, stunned. All my adult life, I had been waiting to hear something like that. My father, that mountain of a man, that countryman, could not address his son directly and ask forgiveness. It just wasn't in him to do. He had to hide behind a $10 word, transgressions, to do it, and to couch those penitential lines as a recollection of a conversation with God. But there it was. Daddy was saying he was sorry. With a man as prideful as my father, that shaky, roundabout confession was as good as it was ever going to get, and it was sincere. I leaned back in. I put my hand onto the back of his thinning hair. I guided his head to my chest. I kissed him on the forehead and told him, "Thank you. I love you." Then I walked away, got into my car, and drove off. I was afraid to look back at my dad because I didn't want to see him crying, because I knew that's exactly what he was doing. As I drove back home, I could not believe what had just happened. Daddy apologized. That wasn't supposed to happen ever, but it had. Glory to God, it had. Driving home that morning, the truth came to me that if I had known all the suffering and the rejection that lay ahead of me back in my hometown, I never would have returned after my sister died. But if I had not done that, I never would have been healed of this wound that I had been carrying all my life. And I never would have been freed of this distorted relationship I had with God and released into a more perfect communion with him. And I never would have been there on the front porch to hear my father say in his very imperfect way that he was sorry. What had just happened on his front porch was my father putting a key into shackles, a key that only he possessed, unlocking them and casting off that invisible iron ball that I carried with me everywhere I went and had done for most of my life. I was free, and in a way, so was my father. Well, Daddy's physical decline accelerated that spring. The decay of his body was for him a terrible cross, because he was a man of action. He was one of the most intelligent men I've ever known, but he disdained intellectualism. He measured his own worth by what he could do with his body to change the world. And there he was. His body made him basically homebound and immobile. He became housebound in early summer, and in early summer, he entered a home hospice program. He spent the summer of 2015 waiting to die, measuring out his days in the pilgrimage from his bedroom to his chair in the living room to his rocking chair on the front porch and back again. One August day, he called me up and said he couldn't lift himself off the couch. I jumped in my car, went over there, and my mom and I wrestled to get him into his wheelchair. The pain of the humiliation on his face was searing. In the right order of things, he was the one who had to be helping others. For Rage-Rear to be dependent on anybody else was like the tearing of the veil in the temple, a violent disruption of the cosmos. Yet this is what he was living with in his final months. He was defeated by time. So Mama and I helped him to settle in the hospital bed that the hospice folks had set up in his bedroom. He would never again rise from that bed. I moved into the house that morning with my dad. This was the end. We all knew this. My mom was just too exhausted to continue in her role as caregiver, so I asked her to move into the guest room and let me take the bed that she and my father had slept in for all of their marriage. It was next to the hospital bed, so I could be there to attend to all of his needs. I count it one of the great privileges of my life to have been able to live with my dad his last 8 days on earth and to sleep right beside him, helping him with all of his needs. As it turns out, the greatest gift my dad gave me in life was the opportunity to help him when he was helpless, to suffer with him, to pray with him, and to give him the medicines that helped him, to moisten his mouth when he could no longer swallow, and to pour myself out for him. Hospice provided my dad with morphine to ease his pain and suffering. My job was to administer the morphine to him regularly. His mind was clear for a couple of days, but as he began to recede into the mist, sleeping a lot and seeming not quite to return to us when he would wake up, I read to him, I prayed with him, I prayed over him, I talked with him, I rubbed lotion into his dry, pencil-thin legs, and did everything I could to let him know he was loved and that he was not alone. We never had a single meaningful conversation that week, but we didn't have to. Our communication was wordless. Well, days later, the moment of his death was at hand. All of us in the family gathered around our dying patriarch, all the family members who could get there, and as many of our neighbors who could make it. Daddy had not been conscious for a couple of days. His bedroom filled with the people who had loved him for most of his life. They had come to see him off. At the end, his breathing became fast and labored, and he writhed as if he were trying to shake off the flesh. Mama took his right hand and I took his left. As Daddy drew his final agonized breaths, I looked into his face. It was the only thing I saw, and in it, I saw the face of Christ. More importantly, I saw him, not the man of whom I was in awe and the man I sometimes hated, the man whose difficult legacy I had wrestled with in my heart for decades. But I saw him as a fellow sinner and sufferer, a poor creature who needed my love as surely as I needed it. Death humbles us all. The hand that held me as a helpless baby, I held myself when his soul left his helpless body. There's a perfect harmony in this, a harmony rightly divided and bound together, not by justice, but by love, the love that moves the sun and all the other stars, as Dante said. My final words to my father were, "Thank you, old man, for everything." And they may be the truest words I ever spoke to him. Well, we all said to our father together over his body and sang, "I'll Fly Away." Somebody went to call the funeral home. The word went out to the community that Mr. Ray had passed. People started coming by to pay their respects. I didn't get back to my own house until late that night, utterly exhausted. It was the first time I'd been in my house in 8 days. I sat down at my kitchen table, alone with my thoughts, marveling at the sense of calm I felt. I had just watched my father die and live through the day that all of my life I dreaded above all others. The thought of the world without my dad in it had always been intolerable to me and terrifying. I don't know why, but it just was. It was as if I feared that I would be annihilated without his presence to ground me in this world and to ground all of us. Fear of my dad's death was something close to a terror for me. In fact, I told my wife before we got married that she should be aware of the day of my father's death because I was going to shatter into a million pieces and she would have to pick him up. And yet, here we were. Daddy was gone, and I was fine. I had no thought that night other than gratitude for his life and gratitude that he was no longer in pain. The future did not appear frightening to me at all, nor did the present. All shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, as Julian of Norwich wrote. I felt this powerfully. How in the world was this possible? By what means did this gift, this peace that passes all understanding, come to me on the day I had feared most all of my life. And then I knew, in his will is our peace. The words of Picard of the Nun, Dante had led the way for me to dwell in the Lord's will and not my own. I had to learn through Dante and through repentance to abide in faith, hope, and love. That is why on the day that was supposed to be my own personal apocalypse, I rested in the golden light of that peace that passes all understanding. And that night, alone in my kitchen, the day my dad died with me holding his hand, I wept the only tears that have ever left my eyes over my father's passing. And they were not tears of mourning. They were tears of gratitude. Gratitude for him, for the pain and the joy of our difficult life together, and for his beautiful death. For the divine gift of that exiled Tuscan poet, Dante Alighieri, and how God used the poetry he wrote out of his own pain of exile to restore me to life and a father to his son and a son to his father in heaven. In his will is our peace. Believe it. Live it. Suffer for it. There's no other way through this life of exile and hardship to the far shore of our home in heaven. This is the higher justice. And it is love itself. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast from Epiclesis, an Ancient Future faith community. If you'd like to learn more about Ancient Future faith or worship at Epiclesis, visit us on the web at www.epiclesis.org. The Lord be with you.